Chevy Equinox with forward collision alert, automatic emergency braking, and available all-wheel drive. It's my ultimate mobile device. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule a test drive. Chevy Equinox. It's your choice. Own it.
Thank you, Bob. Trust you're doing well. Everything good in Kessler world?
Oh, yeah. Things are good in the Kessler world. It's a good world.
I traded text messages with Rokan yesterday. I said, so are you going to play back the audio of Donald Trump? He said, oh, yeah, we're on that. And I suppose everybody's had a crack at it. And the Mincing Rascals will be talking about that after the 1:30 edition of Bob Kessler doing WGN Radio News. May I just observe something about that, though, Bob?
Please do. That's why you're here.
Please.
Do your
yes,
job.
Yes, John. I don't think, and you'll hear this in the podcast, it was such a terrible thing he did. I'm not even sure that some of the reporters that were on the other line, like the Washington Post or People Magazine, etc., they may well have known that that was Trump pretending to be John Miller or somebody else, John Barron. And it was kind of tacitly understood that this is the way he's going to represent himself. I don't know what was going on there, but it was 25 years ago and he wasn't the presidential candidate. So I don't think it's the worst thing he's done. No. That's it. You know what the worst thing is he's done is lying about it now. When they called him on the Today Show, he should have just made a joke, you know, and brushed it aside. But instead, he it's like he came to a fork in the road, and it sounded like he didn't know they were going to ask him about this. He said, I'm hearing it for the first time. And so now instantly, national television, the Today Show, he's kind of busted, and it's embarrassing, and it makes him mad. What are you going to do, Donald? Are you going to own it and go, yeah, you know, when I was real estate magnate going through women left and right, I thought it'd be smarter to just pretend to be a spokesperson, and then I wouldn't be called on it, but I could manage the message. Fine. That will go away like that. But instead, he denies it. So now there's this whole new narrative. CNN has voice detectives analyzing the audio.
I saw that, but that audio was pretty crummy because it's pretty old. It's very old. The voice guy on CNN said, well, it probably is him, but my software can't tell with absolute certainty that it is.
If the American people know one thing right now, because we've only listened to Donald Trump for the last 12 months, it is what he sounds like, what his mannerisms are. Yeah. You know what's more telling than the voice is the speech itself, the words, the vocabulary, the hubris, that sort of thing. You know, when you listen to it, you go, even if this is a bad impersonation of Trump, the guy's got the language down. It's Trump. And in fact, he's admitted as much in the past to other reporters, once in a courtroom. So it's Donald Trump. He just played the wrong card when they asked him about it. I mean, I know you've heard the audio. And mm-hmm. I'm not going to go on at length about it here. But let me just play for you a little clip because it's just too irresistible.
I sort of just put it here to handle because I've never seen anybody get so many calls from the press.
Where did you come from?
I basically work for different firms. I work for a couple of different firms. And I'm somebody that knows. And I think somebody that he trusts and likes. So I'm going to do this a little part-time and then get on with my life, too.
And then I'm going to move on with my life. I'm going to become president of the United States. John Miller, President, USA.
It just doesn't really fit what I saw as Trump's psychological profile. I figured he's so wealthy, he can just hire a publicist, and the publicist will do his bidding and present him in the way that he wants to be presented. And why take the time to do – because that stuff takes time.
Well, I think there's nothing he likes better talking about than himself. We're all a little bit that way.
That much I do realize about his psychological profile.
And I also talked to a PR guy yesterday, and he said, well, 25 years ago, business magnates and – you know, the internet hadn't been invented yet. He hadn't got a TV show yet. I mean, the PR guy I was talking to was crediting Trump as being very forward-thinking. In the absence of a PR person, it's good to go ahead and invent one. And again, remember, if you are the PR person for yourself, then we can't call you on it. We can't say, hey, well, why did you do this? That's a contradiction. You can simply offer the statement, quote-unquote, that person is making. You don't have to be called on it because you're only speaking for them, and yet you can so carefully craft or control the message. Here's the last thing I'm going to play for you. This is him on the Today Show.
So where of the tape? Is it you?
No, I don't think it. I don't know anything about it. You're telling me about it for the first time, and it doesn't sound like my voice at all. I have many, many people that are trying to imitate my voice, and you can imagine that. And this sounds like one of the scams, one of the many scams.
Yeah, but people weren't trying to imitate him 25 years ago. They're imitating him now, not 25 years ago. The rascals will mince on that later on the show. Thomas Jefferson makes a rare appearance on our Saturday show here today, too, talking about tax returns and talking about the auction today of a lock of his very own hair. We'll talk a little bit about how people talk about the Cubs and the White Sox in Chicago, and our Vibe Score segment is later on. I had hoped that Christy Gutowski would be able to join us. The reporter at the Chicago Tribune, who you may have read online today or yesterday, and whose piece will be in tomorrow, I believe, Chicago Tribune. It's about officer, well, here's the headline, officer in Laquan McDonald killing, quote, not the monster people think, wife says. Gutowski got access to, sat down in their home and interviewed for 3 hours his wife, and it's a really terrific piece, and I just wanted to read from it a little bit and then ask you a question or two about it. And again, you'll see this at length in tomorrow's paper if you haven't yet already read it in online. But she's talking about Jason Van Dyke, the officer who's charged with the murder of Laquan McDonald. And from that article, she says Van Dyke, age 38, has been suspended without pay or benefits since he was charged last fall with first-degree murder. He has declined to comment on the advice of his attorney, but with Van Dyke's approval, his wife met a Tribune reporter in their modest Southwest Side home filled with framed photos of the couple with their two middle school-age daughters during happier times. Tiffany Van Dyke describes him as a kind and gentle soul. My hope is that people out there, the general public, the people who are hearing only one side, they will see the human side to my husband, she said. Incidentally, the two of them had been, I don't know if they still are, had been undergoing marriage counseling at the time. They say that the circling of the wagons since this has all happened has actually made their marriage closer, but they've obviously had some tough times. The Tribune has told the tragic story of McDonald's life born to Laquan McDonald's life born to an absent father and a teenage mother ill-equipped to care for him and exposed to childhood neglect and abuse. A state ward, McDonald embraced the drugs and gangs that saturated his West Side neighborhood. Diagnosed with learning disabilities and complex mental health problems, he had school expulsions and drug arrests and was in and out of juvenile detention. Van Dyke, meanwhile, grew up in the western suburbs, about a half hour west of Chicago, but far from the brutal landscape of McDonald's world. His parents still live in the house where Van Dyke and his younger sister were raised, in a working-class neighborhood. At Hinsdale South High School, he played football. He played basketball, or baseball. It says he played on the football team and participated in band, playing trumpet and baritone before his 1996 graduation. He graduated from the police academy in 2002. His wife, 35, a fitness instructor, smiled at the memory of her husband walking across the stage to collect his certificate. That was one of the proudest days of my life, she said. He knew he was going to be able to do something that would hopefully make a difference. In more than a dozen years on the street, Van Dyke worked at night in mostly high-crime districts, including Englewood and Chicago Lawn. He was picked to take part in a targeted response unit that aggressively went into neighborhoods, hit spikes in violent crime before police brass abandoned that strategy. She said that her husband rarely opened up to her about all of the violence. Department records show he's been spit on, kicked, punched, surrounded by an angry mob, threatened at least twice with knives. Instead, he chose to share with her the good moments, including the time he helped lock a guy up because he was causing terror to a neighborhood, taking back a park so the kids could play on the basketball court, she said. Once, some 6 years ago, Van Dyke came home about 2 a.m. with the mutt mix. He kept noticing roaming the streets alone in the cold while he was out on patrol in Englewood. She's been the family dog ever since. When you start out, she said, and you're so optimistic about helping others, but unfortunately, people don't want the help any longer, or they just don't trust you to be able to help them. It does change you, she said. It doesn't make him a bad person, but it does take a toll and does make a person different. His favorite thing, he used to say, was he loved to drive through a neighborhood and see someone wave to him, and he would wave back. Unfortunately, as time went by, that got less and less and less because the crime and violence got worse and worse and worse. So there's a sympathetic picture of him. They sure don't skimp, though, on the details about the marks against his career. Van Dyke, they write, has received 53 commendations over his career. According to his personal file, his wife said one of his proudest moments came when he helped secure the parade route for President Obama's inauguration in Washington. But there were complaints, lots of them. Under the police department's accountability system, Van Dyke was never disciplined. His record showed that accountability system has come under criticism. Van Dyke was also sued 3 times, twice successfully. In a fourth case, the McDonald's shooting, the city paid $5 million to the family before a lawsuit was even filed. That puts him in unflattering company. Earlier this year, a Tribune investigation found that only 1% of the city's more than 12,000 officers had at least 3 legal settlements or financial judgments in which the city paid out money over a 6.5-year period. More than 4 out of 5 officers were never named in a single such lawsuit. Over a slightly different 6.5-year period than the one in which the Tribune investigated, the city paid out 3 times in cases involving Van Dyke. And they go on to describe the numerous instances in which he's been cited, in which he's been involved in violent actions. And this is the point. I read this piece, and I come away with the conclusion that, you know, I don't know what happened that day. You watch the video, and incidentally, I think this is fascinating. His wife, Tiffany, has not watched the video. She has still not seen the video. Maybe that's a wise coping mechanism. They've just got to survive right now. What good does her watching that video do them if she doesn't want to watch it? But I read this article, and I get mad at the union, and I get mad at the police department. This is a guy who should not have been out there. He was in the tough districts. He was there for 12 years. He was kind of a quiet guy, it sounds like. He was having marital problems. It's starting to wear on you. The kids in the street don't wave back. You've got this history of marks on your record. If you were going to guess an officer who might, in the heat of the moment, suffer a lapse in judgment, who might panic, who might just be ticked off one last time and pull the trigger, it's Officer Van Dyke. He pulled the trigger. But does anybody think that maybe the system failed him too? I hate how cliche that sounds, but I couldn't help but read this and found myself getting actually angrier at the department and the institution than him. I'm going to open the phone lines, and I hope you call. 312-981-7200. I'm John Williams. This is WGN. Let's pick up a line with Mary. You're on WGN. Hi, Mary. What can we do for you?
Hi there. Well, you know, I usually don't call in for things like this, but I had to tell you, just listening to your, you know, your recap of the situation, I could not stay silent about it. You are spot on. I come from a long line. I'm not a peace officer myself, although I did dispatch for years. I have a lot of family members who are police officers, and I'm a social worker by trade, but I'm telling you, in Illinois, you know, one of the richest states per capita, and yet when it comes to funding and all the stuff that, you know, we have going on circus-wise in Illinois, we're 50 out of 50 for how we take care of people. So when you're talking about, you know, the onus needs to be on, not you, you know, I'm saying that figuratively, of course, you know, people think that if you're, you know, putting yourself on the front lines, if you're working with children at risk, meaning children that are perpetrators and people that have been abused, there's this level, there's this mentality that people think that you need to be a saint to do that, and that inadvertently, that's your pay for being a nice person. How can you do that? That's wonderful you're able to do that. What people don't take into account is that day in, day out, when, yes, we do make the choice to work with this segment of our population. However, people don't remember that these people are human, too. You know, you're dealing with people who many times know their rights, they know their rights much more than you know your rights.
Yeah.
And they can do everything under the sun to you, and literally anything and everything. And at the end of the day, if you are human for a moment, you're the one called on the carpet.
You know what really touched me in that article too, Mary, was when they said that he used to love it when the kids waved back. And I thought about that. When was the last time I gave a friendly wave to the police officer and he waved back? And I don't think I do that as often as I used to. And
yeah.
We've
turned into a very jaded society.
I think so. And we think these people are better than that. You know, I honestly think that I'm going to sort of remember that these people are doing the work I don't want to do or couldn't do. We should at least acknowledge that, be friendly to them, wave to them, support them emotionally that way, because I think they carry a bigger emotional burden than we think. And the last thing I just want to stress about this is he pulled the trigger. That kid was nowhere near him. There was no threat. He made a mistake, and he may spend the rest of his life in jail for it. But let's understand that he should not have been out there. Where was a system that could have known that and would have kept him off the street?
Exactly, exactly. And when profit is always something that is considered first, but it's not publicized as being the priority, that is exactly where the system is wrong. You know, people don't go into the helping professions to say, hey, I want to go screw up somebody's life today.
Well, and I bet he didn't wake up. Thank you for the call, Mary. I'm glad you joined us. And I'm sure he didn't get up that morning, you know, put on his badge and say, I'm going to go shoot somebody. It was a deadly mistake. He should pay some price for that. But you'd like to see more accountability or more support. We'll pause here. Bob's going to do the news. The Mincing Rascals are on it again. They're talking about Governor Rauner and how he compares to other governors across the union, and a little bit about the taxes that may come out of your pocket. And they're certainly talking about you-know-who on WGN. Freeze warning, huh?
Yeah.
Freeze warning tonight?
Nice.
So does that mean 32 or 34? It doesn't mean it's going to get below freezing.
Right.
It,
I think if my understanding is right, it can get cold enough, and then with the wind, you can get frost.
Yeah.
So the low is in the mid-30s, but you can still get frost.
Yeah, we had a little ice in my house this morning. I'm a little north of you, but I mean, dang, you already had a 90-degree day, or we've had such warm weather. You hate to see a freeze warning for the games and the plants and everything else. So here's what we do on Saturdays at this time. Hi, it's John Williams. I appreciate you tuning in. We do a podcast every Friday. Steve Bertrand, Eric Zorn, Krista McQuarrie, and I, we drop it on Fridays. You can find it on my Facebook page. I'll tell you more how you can subscribe to the Mincing Rascals in a second, but it is, as you might imagine, I like to play back part of it on Saturdays so you get a sample of it. The gang is really good this week, and here's some highlights from this week's Mincing Rascals.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
And I'm Krista McQuarrie, a member of the editorial board and a columnist twice a month.
I'm Eric Zorn. I'm a columnist for the Tribune. You can read my vital must-read column on Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays.
It's no fair. He put adjectives in.
I know. I didn't know we were supposed to editorialize when we were introducing ourselves like that. Who was that, a fake spokesperson for Eric Zorn?
That wasn't me. That was my spokesman.
John Miller.
Okay, so Bertrand, tell us this story.
Okay, so People Magazine calls Trump's office, say, we want to comment, we're doing a story. And they say, well, Mr. Trump's not available. And a few minutes later, this guy calls the reporter and says, it's John Miller.
What's your name again?
John Miller.
And you work with
Donald? Yes, that's correct. He treats everybody well. And,
yeah.
You don't know him, but he's a...
No, I have met him.
Have you met him?
Yeah.
He's a good guy, and he's not going to hurt anybody.
And he goes on to say, you know, I just started here. I'm not going to be here long, but Donald Trump likes me a lot. Well, it's Donald Trump. It's Donald Trump on the phone pretending to be this guy, John Miller, and they've got the audio of it.
Oh, man.
And it's clearly him, and he says, well, no, it's not. It wasn't him, but it's just the weirdest thing.
I think it's hilarious. I think it's funny. It's People Magazine, and if the reporter can't decipher Donald
Trump's
voice. And
it's before he was a presidential candidate.
Surely this will derail his campaign.
Wait, you really think that's okay?
At some point, I couldn't care less
if some entertainment reporter's calling about his extramarital affairs or whatever, and he pretends to be somebody else. And
here we go.
Who wouldn't want a spokesman? I think that in year 8 of the Trump presidency, I'm going to be saying this, that This has, he's finally gone too far. This is it. This guys, is the end of his career.
You guys don't think that's a little weird?
I think it's weird.
I think it's bold. It's weird and bold.
It's
but
Trumpian.
It's very Trumpian. And again, they were probably digging up dirt on him. So why not play hardball if they're
if playing
hardball?
If he did that last week, Steve, I think you have a better case.
Okay.
We sound like we just popped poor Steve's balloon.
I think it's so funny.
Oh, it is. That, it's
and
awesome.
And if you would hear the tape and how with the things he's saying, and he's like, you know, frankly, you know, he's being very good to Ivanka. He's really taking care of her. He's a great guy. And all this stuff, it's just ridiculous. Okay, how about this one I noticed about Trump this week? Whenever he talks with someone, he always makes it as if they wanted to talk to him. I think in ways that others don't. I mean, there was the joke on Saturday Night Live or somewhere where Donald Trump calls Barack Obama and he says, "Congratulations, you've reached Donald Trump." He had a phone conversation with Lindsey Graham this week, and he makes a point to say, "Lindsey Graham called me this week. I was totally surprised. I didn't expect it."
Didn't they get into a big war early on? He gave out Lindsey Graham's cell phone number.
Yeah.
What about Trump's butler?
Trump's butler for years. Who I believe now is the official historian at one of his clubs. No, really. Trump would be the guy who has a historian
right.
for one of his clubs. And that man has been saying terrible things about President Obama, including calling for his death.
Peter Sagal on Twitter said, "I also disavow anything my butler says."
How about Mitt Romney, again, talking about the tax returns? I think the tax things are interesting. Again, saying yesterday that he thinks it's disqualifying. Not that Trump should do it, but that if he doesn't do it, it should disqualify him from being elected president.
What do you think of that, Steve?
I think that's pretty strong. I mean, I think it's just another thing that Trump will get away with. And, you know, I just love his language that he's not going to release it until
the
audit is done or until after the election. Well, he's not going to release it after the election. He's not going to say, "Oh, by the way, I won. Here are my taxes."
He has promised to release them for months.
Right.
So if he doesn't...
He won't. He said he's not going to.
I don't know why he doesn't, because I cannot... Somebody dream up something in there that would derail his campaign.
If he has given very little money to charity, if he has, you know, taken advantage of some very questionable tax loopholes, if we find out that he has businesses or investments in shady companies,
maybe
all kinds of things.
Yeah,
to create
maybe
conflicts
he's overpaid
for him.
His spokesman, John Miller.
All of those things.
I think Kristen is right. I think that it is hypocrisy that is what could possibly derail Trump's support. That kind of thing. When he says outrageous things, that doesn't. I mean, that just kind of gets him more attention and more support. But if he is shown to be a hypocrite, and this is why the release of the transcript of his interview with the New York Times editorial board. I don't know if you guys followed this story, but he went and spoke to the New York Times editorial board. He asked that it be off the record. The rumor is that he said that he was just saying a lot of this stuff because he wanted to win votes.
It was about the wall,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, don't take me seriously about the wall. He has refused to lift that off-the-record agreement. And so the thinking is with that and with the tax returns, same as Hillary Clinton's speeches to Goldman Sachs, which is that the political cost of releasing them is greater than the cost of not releasing them and looking like you've got something to hide.
I don't think editorial board meetings, if they are off the record, they're off the record. And that's up to the New York Times to set those ground rules and then honor it.
Is Hillary's speech to Goldman Sachs the same way then, Kristen?
Well, no, it was a paid... I mean, I don't get that exercise about whether or not she could those transcripts should be released. I think we can all pretty much assume it was a welcoming speech and she praised them and she wasn't tough on Wall Street. But she got paid, what, over the course of a few years, $400,000 to make those speeches. That's different than a candidate going into an editorial board meeting where the rule is if it's off the record, it's off the record. And we do that all the time. And you do want people to speak freely, but then you have to honor it.
You really think the people that are turning up at those rallies are going to go, "Wait a minute, he didn't give as much to veterans. I'm not going to vote for him now."
I mean, maybe not. But I mean, the Clintons have had to release their taxes. They made $100 million in the past few years.
Wow.
So she is having to go through scrutiny over how much money they gave away and how much they paid, and she's a multi millionaire now, not too far off the track from Donald Trump. So I do think there is a case to be made that it would be patently unfair for him to not have to go through the same sort of scrutiny that she is.
Romney is hitting him harder than anyone else, really, about it. You know, saying this disqualifying thing—that's a strong word.
Right.
It's not the law. You don't have to. You know, all of this is tradition that goes back. Incidentally, my understanding is to the Checkers speech. Remember, Nixon was accused of improperly using some campaign funds, so he gave that speech for 29 minutes to the American people.
She has a fine cloth.
She has
coat.
A Republican
cloth coat.
A Republican cloth coat, and not a mink coat. And then Nixon went on to describe every single thing about his finances, including what the cost of their homes were, how much they still owed on the mortgages for her mom. And then at the end, he said they're going to keep the little dog, too. Forward from there, we now have this tradition of releasing income taxes.
Donald Trump said this morning, he said, look, there are a lot of presidents who haven't. I mean, there's John Quincy Adams. There's Millard Fillmore didn't.
I thought also very interesting this week was Paul Ryan meeting with Trump for the summit. Eric, what's your takeaway from that? Was that legit? Are they making progress? How do you read that?
Well, it seems to me that Paul Ryan does have some major policy differences with Donald Trump on taxes and trade and immigration and sort of basic conservative political philosophy. He's got to keep his eyes on the future, and he also has to think about what a Hillary Clinton presidency would mean for his broader agenda. So I think that he is playing footsie right now with Trump, that he has to endorse him sooner or later, but he is playing the part of, if not actually being the reluctant endorser, but he will come there.
He's between a rock and a hard place. And yet he comes out and says, well, but we need to ensure that we have the same bedrock conservative principles and values. And I keep thinking that's not the problem here. I mean, maybe it is for Republicans, but their real problem is he's cuckoo bananas. Their real problem is that he tried to link Ted Cruz's dad to the assassination of John F. Kennedy.
It hasn't been unproven yet.
I think he's
a birther. What do you have to say aside from that?
There are some policy differences that matter, though, to the voters who, if Trump is going to win, he has to motivate that hard right wing of the party. And they do follow things like Obamacare.
Let's segue to what's going on in Springfield. So the governor is sort of stepping back and hoping that, help me with this, guys, the legislature comes up with a budget, and he's kind of being cagey about responsibility for it. But it includes a increase in taxes of various forms and a cut in spending. Erica, what are your thoughts about what's happening there with the budget impasse?
Well, it certainly seems like some green shoots coming through the soil in Springfield. Independent of Rauner's other agenda, his turnaround agenda, they have to raise taxes and they have to cut spending.
I mean, green shoots, yes. It's hard to say. Some of the Democrats who have emerged from those meetings, they're all on the ballot in November. They don't want to be viewed as tax hikers. But yes, they're talking about expanding the sales tax, increasing the income tax, some of the pension reforms that the governor wants, which, by the way, are totally reasonable. You know, we still spike pensions in this state.
Yeah.
Where you have people leaving office or, you know, leaving positions with $180,000 salaries and 3% compounded COLAs. And so there's a movement to make sure that local bodies, if you're going to pay your administrators at your schools these ridiculous salaries, then you are going to pick up the pension costs over and above a certain amount. I mean, that is very reasonable. But of course, it's coming from Rauner, so the Democrats will oppose it. It really does rest on Madigan. And I see it as Rauner has taken off the table a lot. And here he is, his chief budget negotiator, putting two tax expansions on the table. And you still have no coming from one person.
Eric shared with us a map that charts the popularity of governors all across this great land of ours. You can imagine where Governor Rauner finished. Did you see the final number for him? Did you see what his approval rating is, Eric?
I don't have it in front of me. It was like 32 or 34, something like that.
34%.
Yeah. Well, when I took a look at that chart, they did all 50 states, and of the top 10 least popular governors, eight are Republicans. And the Republicans only have 62% of the state houses. I will say this, though, of the top 10 most popular governors, eight are also Republican. Is it Rick Snyder or Brownback? Who's the least?
Sam Brownback, who's having budget problems of his own in Kansas, is at 26%. 26%. Rick Snyder from Flint fell the furthest from Flint. Yeah, he might as well be the governor.
Right,
of Flint.
That's the reason.
No, if he was from Flint, we wouldn't have this problem.
No kidding. It'd be 32%. So Brownback 26, Snyder 32, Governor Rauner at 34. If you want to just stay in the neighborhood, Mike Pence in Indiana, 48. Scott Walker, Wisconsin, 43. The more popular governors are in Wyoming, Massachusetts, and Maryland.
Up to 70% popular. That must be a good governor.
That's a governor of Wyoming. I think that's where everybody is pretty like-minded and they don't have many problems.
So that's where 7 out of 10 people support him, and it's literally 7 out of 10 people.
Touche. Steve Bertrand and Kristen McQuarrie and Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune. That's the Mincing Rascals. You can get all of that at WGNplus.com, or if you're on Facebook, like me there, I'm King John on Facebook. You can subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes, too, and the gang's always really good. So thanks to all of them for that. You know, when we were mentioning that this business of disclosing your finances goes back to the Checkers speech and Richard Nixon. So I went back and listened to that this week. It is really interesting, the contrast between a very then, anyway, humble Vice President Richard Nixon, who was, you can't talk about Richard Nixon that you don't start to sound like Richard Nixon. And he was, you know, talking about his finances, and he was so careful to portray himself as not too rich. And then fast forward to today, and you have Donald Trump, who has a butler. Times have changed. And when you go back and play back some of that audio, it's almost sweet. I'll make that point in a minute on WGN. So just for the fun of it, let's travel back in time for a second here, because this whole business of, and I don't know how you feel about that, is it that vital or important that candidates reveal their income taxes and personal finances? Thomas Jefferson has something to say about that in the next hour. But we have this tradition since the Nixon Checkers speech, which included, all right, Griff, cut one, this.
This is unprecedented in the history of American politics. I am going at this time to give to this television and radio audience a complete financial history. Everything I've earned, everything I've spent, everything I owe. And I want you to know the facts. I'll have to start early. I was born in 1913.
Oh, no. He's going back to 1913. And then he does it. He talks about how much they have in their savings account and checking account, what the mortgage is on their house and the other house they got for one of their moms, how much they owe on that. It was very revealing. At the end, he gives the famous Checkers part of the talk.
That's what we have, and that's what we owe. It isn't very much, but Pat and I have the satisfaction that every dime that we've got is honestly ours. Pat doesn't have a mink coat, but she does have a respectable Republican cloth coat. And I always tell her that she'd look good in anything. One other thing I probably should tell you, we did get something, a gift, after the election. A man down in Texas heard Pat in the radio mention the fact that our two youngsters would like to have a dog. And believe it or not, the day before we left on this campaign trip, we got a message from the Union Station in Baltimore saying they had a package for us. We went down to get it. You know what it was? It was a little Cocker Spaniel dog in a crate that he'd sent all the way from Texas. Black and white, spotted. And our little girl, Tricia, the six-year-old, named it Checkers. And you know, the kids, like all kids, love the dog. And I just want to say this right now, that regardless of what they say about it, we're going to keep him.
So times have changed this way, too. What would get Nixon in trouble now is not that he accepted a gift, but that the dog was shipped in a crate from Texas. The news is coming up. Thomas Jefferson is a sometimes guest on my show. We do these fun stage shows. We've got one coming up right after the upcoming election. We do a podcast with him each week. Did you hear that some of his hair is being auctioned off? I had to reach out to him, and what he had to say was so much fun, I want you to hear it after the news. We'll do our Vibe Score segment and talk to the boys from The Beat on WGN. Bet it feels even cooler than that by the lake, huh? 46
it is, yeah.
And 36 tonight. Wow.
We got 20-mile-an-hour winds at Midway. So that adds some chill.
A little bit. By the way, I guess the TV producers, thank you, Bob. This is John Williams. I don't know if you're a fan of any of these shows, Mr. Kessler, but next week the networks announce their lineup changes or what they're going to do next season. And so we now have the list of the shows that are being canceled. So here are some of the ones that I think are noteworthy. The Muppets, one-year run. You know, it was the edgier Muppets. Now it's not going to be on anymore.
Muppets and edgy doesn't quite. The Miss Piggy Kermit stuff in the 70s, that was edgy enough.
The double entendres got a little more sophisticated on this one. They thought they'd find an audience. I guess they didn't. Or maybe they did and the networks aren't patient enough. I'll get to that point in a minute. The Family is canceled. Nashville's been canceled. You know, I want to say this. I'm a huge fan of Nashville. I love that show. I'm so sorry it got canceled. And then you should say, really, John, when's the last time you watched an episode? And I would say, oh, God, I haven't watched it in a long time. So
well, it's your fault.
I know. I'm out for that. Castle, after 8 seasons, has been canceled. I never understood why it lasted one. CSI Cyber, after 2 seasons, canceled. And then the two that really hit hard at our house. One is called Grandfathers, the John Stamos show, where, lo and behold, he's a grandfather now. He looks awesome, so my wife loves this show, and it's a fun, funny show. She was a big fan, and I live in the house with Brenda, so I watched it a lot, and I thought it was pretty good. The one we both really loved and got canceled was The Grinder, the Rob Lowe show. Did you ever watch The Grinder?
A little bit, yeah.
I thought that thing was hilarious.
Great idea.
Yeah, so Rob Lowe played a guy whose own show had recently been canceled. And on that show, it was a drama called The Grinder, where Rob Lowe played an attorney, a very popular, slick attorney who always had this sort of, the grinder means that, you know, he'll just keep working the case. He'll keep grinding it until he gets justice. That show gets canceled. So then he moves back in with his brother and his family. They happen to be real attorneys. And he wants to join the law firm because he has like 8 seasons under his belt as The Grinder. And they go, yeah, but that was on TV. You're not really a lawyer. He can't seem to get his head around that. And Rob Lowe is so funny, and the cast is so funny on that show.
Yeah. Lowe's a good comedic actor, and I saw an interview with him talking about how it was Wayne's World. He was in those movies, and that taught him how to do comedy.
You know, it's a shame, but when I think about him, I think how much I liked him on West Wing. How much I like him on this show. You know, some of the movies he was in was pretty good. The one mark that's glaring and stands out in my mind, do you know what I'm thinking? What was his big miss, his big fail?
Well, I know. Are you talking something in his personal life or his professional one?
A professional. Oh, there's some personal failings, too. This is the one to me. Was it the Oscars where he came out and did a singing and dancing number that was a send-up of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs or something like that?
I don't remember that.
Okay, well, there was something like that.
He's probably glad someone doesn't.
He's probably glad I can't exactly put my finger on it. Griffin, did you watch The Grinder? Were you a fan of that show at all?
I love The Grinder, too. Yeah, I did not know about this Oscars thing. I'm looking it up, and it looks like there was something at the 1989 opening number of the Oscars that is now infamously disastrous, as Vanity Fair puts it.
Thank you. Okay. And it was the 1989 Oscars opening number, right?
Yeah.
It's really bad.
You can't forget it. I didn't even know about it. So I think he's in the clear on that one. but yeah, I think of him as just a great comedic actor. I loved The Grinder. It was only one joke repeated over and over, but that one joke was so good that I didn't really care.
What do you mean by that? What joke?
Just that... that there was no real definition for what the grinder does, what grinding is.
Yeah.
You'd always say, I'm going to grind.
Yeah.
And people would say, that doesn't mean anything. And that never got old to me for some reason. But.
And the fact that he would find himself in real legitimate courtrooms, you know, and inserting himself and then doing his TV shtick that might win over a jury anyway. And it was all improbable and unrealistic and hilarious. It was just a funny show. And I'm like, whatever happened to the patience of these networks? I mean, haven't we all learned that All in the Family and Seinfeld never would have happened if they didn't give it another season? Not that this was maybe that, but it was a good show. Don't you hate it when the show you love gets canceled? And so we're going through that at my house.
But
today.
They've also, shows have found other, you know, they end up on Netflix. That happened with a few shows. What's the one with the guy from La Bamba? And he's a sheriff. I can't remember. I read one of the books. I'm being very vague, but it's a show that was on A&E or something, and he's a sheriff of a town in Wyoming. And it got canceled and now it's on Netflix.
Yeah.
The book was good, by the way.
I can't help you with that, Bob, but I can't say this.
No, another Fox sitcom, The Mindy Project, got canceled after, I think, 3 seasons on Fox, and they're still going strong on Hulu now, so... Some people think that might happen for The Grinder, and I hope it does.
It might go to Hulu. This is the thing. I love The Mindy Project. I didn't know it was on Hulu. So now, like, they're episodes in, seasons in on that, Griff, and I've been missing the latest Mindy Projects? Is that what you're telling me? I'm sorry to hear that. It's 2:15 on WGN. All right, this is John Williams. Let's pause here. I don't know if you heard. You probably didn't. I'm a little closer to Thomas Jefferson news than most Americans. But there is an auction of TJ's hair today, a lock of his hair. I called Jefferson and asked him about it. That was part of our about once a week podcast we do with Thomas Jefferson as well. Highlights from that conversation and what he thinks about the need for candidates to release their income tax returns coming up on WGN.
Now you made it big in the movies, came to Hollywood to play the game. You became a star as an animated mama, earned yourself a place in the Walk of Fame.
This is why they canceled The Grinder. They went back and they found that Rob Lowe singing in the 1989, I think it was, opening number for the Oscars. It's his one great fail, and we're remembering it here on WGN. By the way, Bob Kessler, I think the show you were looking for was Longmire. Does that ring a bell?
That does ring a bell, yes.
Boy,
now that I remember.
That's a show that not only did I never watch, I never even heard that
word. Lou Diamond Phillips was in it.
But you love it when it all comes back now? All the stars, the book, the title, everything's lining up for you. Well, I'm happy about that, but I'm sorry it's gone. And I'm sorry we played that clip from Rob Lowe singing in the Oscars. Okay, so now. We drop a podcast every Friday called The Mincing Rascals, and on as many Fridays as we can find them, I host a podcast with Thomas Jefferson. You know I do these stage shows with Thomas Jefferson throughout Chicagoland and have been doing them for over 10 years now. We will be back on the stage. I'm not exactly sure what the venue is going to be. Maybe the College of DuPage again, just after the next election. So that will be timely. So I've been talking to him in these semi-weekly podcasts about a variety of issues. Here's a couple of highlights from this week's conversation with TJ. This is John Williams reaching once again out to our old friend Thomas Jefferson. President Jefferson, are you there?
I don't like the way you say old, citizen.
Funny you should mention that. Welcome back, President Jefferson. I trust you're well.
I am well. It's planting season in Monticello, and that's always a source of great optimism.
I don't know if you're aware of this, but a man in Dallas has a lock of your hair, and according to the Telegraph of London today, he is going to auction it off. They're expecting it will reach $3,000, which, I'll be honest with you, is a little less than I thought it would bring. I mean, it's your DNA in there.
First of all, I'm surprised. I would want it authenticated as my hair. I'm not sure I like the idea of my hair being auctioned about to the highest bidder. I'm a very, very private man, and I can't for the life of me think why anyone would find that interesting. You know, you're sounding like someone who's talking about Roman relics from the Christian tradition.
I will say this, and I found this fascinating in the story I read about it today. It said that in your era, of course, there was not photography, and so the passing of a lock of hair was seen as somewhat traditional. It is a way to remember a person. To be honest with you, I think it would be fantastic to have a lock of your hair.
Well, you have $8,000.
Three. I got news for you. I only need three.
Well,
I mean,
there you go. I would rather have you have it than it pass into the hands of some Hamiltonian.
When you passed, I guess they clipped some of your hair. Your physician did it. Passed down the hands of his family through generations, and he's going to auction it off. And I'm thinking, heck, I bought dumber things for $3,000 than your hair.
First of all, I had a lock of my wife's hair when she died in September of 1782, I kept a lock of her hair folded up in a small piece of paper, and I placed it in a hidden cabinet in my suite of private rooms at Monticello, and it was discovered after my death that I had kept this all of this time. So it was quite common for us to keep locks of hair in that era. But also, isn't it true in your time that with this DNA you could recreate a dinosaur or a mammoth? I mean, theoretically, you could recreate me.
I have to tell you, the contrast between how you and your colleagues ran for president and how we run for president today has never been more stark. Here's the latest wrinkle on that. Should the candidates release their income taxes?
Certainly not. There were no income taxes in my time, but
personal
the public
finances.
Has no right to know such things. This has nothing to do with the size of the Navy. This has nothing to do with whether we create a post road between Natchez and Nashville. And the public has a right to find out what the candidate's outlook is, whether he's a person of general virtue, whether he's essentially honest, and whether he has an articulatable and agreeable vision for this country. But they don't have a right to know whether his children go to public or private school or whether they're Episcopalians or Methodists.
Private finances would tell us how much that person gave to a charity, say, or how much they were able to deduct because
What would you gain from that would help you with your foreign policy with respect to Ukraine and Russia?
We think the better we know them personally, the better we can anticipate them publicly.
I was in debt all of my life. I would have been embarrassed, I suppose, to have the public looking over my finances, although they might have felt sympathy. You know, when I died, my grandson, Thomas Jefferson Randolph, published a three-volume set of my letters, selected letters. And one of my enemies, I mean, and a very severe enemy, John Quincy Adams, the son of my good friend John Adams, read these letters and saw the sadness of poverty that came to my life after I left the presidency. And he said, "I'm no friend to this Jefferson, but it is an appalling thing that we allow men of his greatness to be poor after serving their country in the way that they did." You know, there were no pensions in my time. There were no stipend of any sort for former presidents, no staff. We couldn't write memoirs with handsome advances or give speeches for hundreds of thousands of pounds or dollars.
Here would have been my advice to you, that after you leave the presidency, you do those things. You write the book, you go speak to whatever Goldman Sachs was back then. You could have made fortunes as the not only former president, but as you say, the beloved author of the Declaration of Independence.
It would have destroyed my sense of myself. I couldn't have lived with that sort of craven opportunism.
You walk out onto a stage, you say, "It's great to be here."
I could never say that. "It's great to be here. I'll be here all week. Please tip your waiter." I know it seems strange to you, but I could never go out glibly and trot out from behind the curtain and say, "How are you all doing tonight?
Hello, Dayton." See him coming out. "It's great to be here." And then he talks a little bit. People clap. They say Jefferson said. The ironic thing is that while Jefferson would not have done that in his era, he spoke in greater detail. That's an edited version of the podcast, but you get the gist of it. That would have seemed to be beneath the presidency. So he dies poor. They have to sell off his estate to pay his debts. He dies poor because he wouldn't make a buck on being Jefferson. We've been making a buck for 10 years with a guy who thinks he's Jefferson ever since. There's money to be made out there, TJ. He said, "No, I can't do it." The Cubs are 26-8. I don't know what the score is of the game right now, but the Cubs are 26-8. And when they lost two games in a row for the first time this year, a sort of panic ripped through my house. Griff or Bob, I know there was some conversation about that. In fact, we were watching the game on TV, and the announcers were talking about how in Chicago call-in radio shows, fans were calling in and they were going, "Oh boy, I don't know, two in a row, we've lost two in a row." We used to call the shows when we won two in a row. We lost two in a row. And if I were just being completely honest, when we lost our second game, it was 2-1 day, I kind of went, "Oh no, maybe it's not real. Maybe we're going to start losing now. You could forgive a Cub fan for feeling that way after 100 years.
By the way, it's 3-2 right now against the Pirates. They're winning.
Cubs are winning.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, they can't lose. The Cubs don't lose. The Cubs always win the games. They always score 9 runs and they win. And so when they lose, you go, well, that's weird. And then they lose again and you go, oh, that's right. I mean, did anybody kind of do that sort of mental thing, that emotional thing?
I also haven't been able to watch a lot of these games yet. I've been, you know, keeping tabs, but it just hasn't – I've been busy and I haven't been able to watch a ton of games. But I was able to watch the second one they lost on that day, and I thought maybe it's me. I don't know, but maybe I need to go back to watching less. But
no, you think you're the jinx? No,
I
think the fact that you felt that way makes me feel good, Griff, because I felt that way too. I don't know if anybody else felt that out there, or you know, are we just so certain that this team is so indomitable?
No, it's just so spoiled right now. That's what happens to fans when I don't know. Don't you think?
Any team that's 26-8, their fans are spoiled. That's not realistic. Even Madden says, guess what? Our ERAs are going to go up.
Yeah.
Some of the batting, Soler's batting average is going to go up, too. He said that was the story today. But, I mean, you know, the ERAs are going to go up and some of the run production is going to come down. So let's be realistic about this and let's not panic either. And then they subsequently won their game after that. And I assume we'll win the rest of their games because that's what they do this year. Here's what happens. You turn on TV, Chris Bryant comes up, he gets a hit, and then we win the games. That's the show. And so when they lost 2 in a row, I just went, I hope we're not going to be just a, you know, win some, lose some team. I mean, we've got enough of a lead now that we could actually play 500 ball for the rest of the year and we'd be just dynamite. But that's not what I thought we had after 34 games. So, I don't know, did anybody else just kind of have that little emotional tweak? 312-981-7200, WGN. John Williams here. We'll pause. News around the corner. And the boys from the beat will comment on that as well. Video has gone viral this week. Obviously, a kid playing the piano. You probably recognize some of those, right? Okay, this is our Vibe Score segment. Saturdays at this time. Hi, it's John Williams here. We do the segment we call Vibe Score. Vibe Score is an app that I co-created with my cousin Tom Hegberg, and with Vibe Score, we feed you the news and you score it. Stories that are of interest to you, you pick the categories. Viral video is this one, and then we ask you a question like, well, what'd you think? On a scale of 1 to 100, what's your vibe? So the viral video that we posted this week is of this guy playing the piano to a medley of those tunes. I thought what was remarkable about that, Griff, was how good that kid was on the piano, too.
Yeah, oh, totally.
Man.
There's a young pianist named Tony Ann, and he took some of the most famous ringtones and turned them into a classical piano medley. And, yeah, it's getting...
I loved it.
It's really cool, right?
It's just fun. It's different. And, you know, it's... look, there's plenty of Time Sucks out there. Hello, BuzzFeed. this was a... A happy 60 seconds of my day, let me put it that way.
Yeah, and I thought when I clicked, I thought it was just going to be him playing each ringtone, but he kind of turned it into a whole other thing. And then if you keep listening, it really gets a little more intricate, and he's like weaving them back and forth, and it was very cool.
I did find that my heart started beating faster, like it does when my cell phone rings, and I actually have it on and not on silent, where it's like, oh my God, I have to answer it now. But I really enjoyed the performance.
Do you guys, I was thinking about this the other day, just speaking of your heart racing because you think that's your phone ringing. I used to get phantom rings and then phantom vibrations all the time.
Yes.
And I don't anymore. Maybe that's just the evolution of us as consumers with these things. But when it was first your ringtone, you were always like, oh, did I hear it? Did I hear it? And then you'd say, I'll put it on vibrate. It's always in our pocket or purse. And then you think, oh, is it vibrating? And you would feel your thigh tingle. guys, when it,
yes,
where your phone is, but their phone wasn't there.
And also, when with the old BlackBerry, it had a red light that would like flash when you had a message, and so I would think I would see my phone flashing, and it wasn't.
And I
there
realized
was nothing, and I didn't have any messages, and I wasn't cool.
And I realized I was standing on an L tracks, looking at this light flashing, just zombie-like.
It was the green light.
All right, what else you got for us, Griff? What else is on the Vibe Score segment this week?
In music, I'm not going to play it because I can't find it online. they're being very tricky with it. But Drake has a new album called Views.
I did enjoy the Pitchfork article that's linked in the Vibe Score segment, though.
Oh,
we
cool.
We get to read about the album.
Yeah, it's a huge hit. It's accrued 245 million streams in its first week and almost a million sales. And it has 20 songs on the Billboard Hot 100, which is a record. And he's hosting SNL tonight. So we put the first song from that album on. It's called Keep the Family Close, and we scored it. It's getting a 75.
By the way, just speaking of music for a second, you know, I'm a little closer to this Prince story than you guys are. But did you see how many albums he sold the week?
You were best friends, huh? Kristen just gave me a look like, oh, well, okay.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yes, he is.
Name dropper. Trust me, I don't know anything
about... Have you went
about...
to the little Paisley, or what's it called?
Paisley Park. Right, yeah. No.
Have you been to the club everybody's
First
going
Avenue.
To?
Yeah, no, yeah. I have not, but props that I know those places.
Yeah,
no.
you proved him right by not knowing what Paisley Park is called.
So I win, and the number of albums that he sold after his death is 10 times the number sold by Michael Jackson after his death. 10 times the number that Whitney Houston or David Bowie sold after their death.
I could totally see that.
It's 4 million. He did 4 million in sales.
I bought two records after his death.
I did too. I did too. I thought, holy cow, I don't own Purple Rain. I thought I was going to lose my citizenship. So yeah. I downloaded Purple Rain.
I'm surprised to hear that it's that much more than David Bowie, because with Michael Jackson and Whitney Houston, I think that's just how the internet has changed. Mm-hmm. And that the morning,
Bowie being more recent, though.
Yeah, but Bowie was kind of recent, so I'm surprised that it was that much more than him, too.
Yeah,
but
it might have been that we knew Bowie's health wasn't great, and this was just so sudden. People felt the rug was just pulled out from underneath them, so out they went. Keep going, Griff. So where are we now?
In food and drink, Budweiser will be called America for the rest of the summer. That sounds weird to say, but that's what I've got in front of me. And what do you think of the change?
So that was the Vibe Score question.
Ten.
You gave it a 10. Yeah.
Now, if they would have said America, I would have loved it. But just America is lame, and they just did it so we would be talking about them, and I hate that we're even talking about them.
Wait, let's
right
pull
now.
That out of context. America is lame. Yeah. What? How dare you?
What are you, Trump's vice presidential candidate now?
Let's make America great again.
My gut reaction was, I hate seeing them trade on the name America. You know, it's like the flag. It's a little sacred to me. And then I looked at the can and I thought, Budweiser is America's beer. And it's a cool can. And
says
it looks.
Who? That's your opinion. There's a lot of people that do not like Budweiser that live in America.
No, I'm a crafty IPA guy now. But trust me, when I saw the can, I went, it's kind of art. It looks pretty. It says America. What's the matter with me? So I forget what I scored a Griff, but I know that where my impulse was like to give it a something below 50, I was like about 60 on it. I'm like, well, so that's where I am.
I see where you're coming from, but that's what all beer companies do. But there's at least a little, I don't know, wiggle room. You know, you trade on American imagery.
Right.
Like put the flag on the can. Okay,
a pickup
fine.
Truck or something like that. Yeah,
that's all beer.
Land in the clear blue waters.
Yeah, I get it.
All beer does that, but to just eliminate any, I don't know, buffer between that and your beer and just, no, we are America. It seems like a little much.
Hey, cut to the chase, man. If you want to be the most American beer, how can you trump this?
Yeah.
We named it America.
I don't think that it's I don't think that it's terrible. It's getting a 41.
That's about right. All right.
Speaking of America, Captain America is ruling at the box office.
Yeah.
It's nearing $1 billion, and critics like it pretty well, too. We asked what your score was for the new Marvel movie.
Yeah, I did not vibe on this one because, for the life of me, I told you last week how hard it was for me to watch the Star Wars installment, and I had to be trapped in an airplane flying across the Atlantic to do it.
Yeah.
I'm not. Unless it, my next flight across the Atlantic is when I have a chance to see that movie. I can't go.
But then you did like it. You
I
liked
did.
The Star
I loved
Wars
it. Movie. It was awesome. And Creed coming back was good, too. So
I'm also really tired of superhero movies all the time. And I went to see this one, and it was good. But I, it can only be so good to me now at this point. It's getting a 68. I gave it a 60. You know, that's how I feel. In the Chicago category, we all know about this. Rahm is fighting with the Friends of the Park over the future placement of the Lucas Museum.
Really? Are they having a disagreement over that? I haven't read that.
Yeah.
What do you think of putting it on the lake? So 100 is put it on the lake. I love it. And 0 is somewhere else, please. What do you think this is getting? What do you think the general consensus is out there?
I think the general consensus is they see it as a stamp of Rahm Emanuel, and it's getting less than 50. I'm going to guess 45.
I would say people don't want it on the lake, so under 50.
53, just over 50, was surprising to me also. Yeah, I thought it would be lower than
that. But still, that's not a yes. That's still like 1 to 153 is not a lot to brag about.
But, you
right?
know, when you talked about it on the Mincing Rascals a couple weeks ago, Steve Bertrand said something about how it was kind of a media story that maybe was being trumped up and people didn't care that much.
Yeah.
When I saw this 53, I thought maybe he's right. I don't know.
I think that the lakefront is sacred. George Lucas is a billionaire. I'm not against him, and his wife seems to be a lovely Chicagoan. That's all good, but I don't know why we're so hell-bent to give some of our lakefront to a billionaire. And it's not being utilized. It's that parking lot.
If it's a parking lot, what's the big deal?
Well,
I mean, it's not like it's a green grass and the bike trail that it's taking up.
Yeah, well, it could be, though. So what is it? 50,
I say put it on the lake, 94.
Okay, it's been decided.
In news and current events, President Obama will become the first sitting president to visit Hiroshima. The White House says the visit will not include an apology. What do you think of this trip? Is it a good idea?
How do you say that city, Kristen? How do you pronounce that word?
I go back and forth between Hiroshima or Hiroshima.
Hiroshima.
Yeah. I hear it both ways.
I hear it both ways, too.
I've been a Hiroshima guy, but now I'm starting to feel uncomfortable with that. I think this is a home run. I think the president isn't going to apologize. That was the second sentence in their release about this. And we're buying their cars. I think we can go over there. That's not a problem. I was shocked to read that he is the first sitting president who hasn't been to Hiroshima.
That is almost embarrassing, I think, to our country.
I do. I don't think it's any. Hey, listen, we can't turn back the clock, and I'm not even interested in the conversation. If we could, what would we do? But is it appropriate for our president to go there? Sure,
absolutely.
It is. Absolutely.
It's getting an 88.
Yay.
Everybody's
I love being on the big crowd.
With you on that. In Chicago sports, Chris Sale of the White Sox is 7-0 with a 1.79 ERA, while Jake Arrieta of the Cubs is 6-0 with a 1.13 ERA. So when ESPN asked Sale who he thought was the best pitcher in Chicago, he said Arrieta. Do you agree? Arrieta was 100. Sale's 0.
Well, people started voting on this before yesterday's game, too. There's no wrong answer to this one, is there, Griff?
Not really. Yeah.
What is it, 100? Did we do it 100 is Arrieta and 0 is Sale, so just left, right, that sort of thing?
Yeah. Swipe left or right.
I would guess the Northsiders got more fans, so I'll bet it's getting a 60. I'll bet it's getting a 78.
Wow.
Which would be in favor of Arrieta.
Kristen, what's your...
I didn't vote because I'm like, I don't really care.
If you don't, we don't need
exactly.
No interlopers.
You were just 1 point off, 79. Although I'm remembering now that I do send you these scores, but I know you don't read it, so it's
fine. I do.
Well, that's so unfair to Sale and the White Sox. I mean, really, yeah. If the Cubs weren't there, they would be the talk of MLB this year.
What's an ERA? I don't know.
Never mind.
I really don't. Right. There might be other people out there that don't.
earned run average. That's how many runs you would give up for any given nine innings that you pitch. So think about that. Those two guys aren't giving up two runs if they pitched nine innings. You can win those games.
So did anybody ask Arrieta who was the best pitcher in Chicago?
That's a good question.
And did he say Sale?
Because that's just the right answer. If you're Chris Sale, you can say yourself. But if you want to be a little, you know, good sport about it, you say, tip my hat to the other guy.
Well, Arrieta also had no hitter in the mix, and that was his second one.
Well, there is that.
Very short span of time.
That's true.
But I don't know. You don't need to be fake humble. I think if you want to say you, go for it.
I would say he might be right now, but
ask me
I will be later at the end of the season.
Ask me who the best pitcher in Chicago is.
Hey, Griffin, who's the best pitcher in Chicago?
Yeah, me. I don't care. It's me. I'm really good. No one knows.
Well, have the two faced each other this season? No, of course they haven't. That would be fun. It would be fun.
There was some talk that they might face each other starting in the All-Star game.
Yeah.
Which would be cool.
Oh, wow. How much fun would that be? Hang on, everybody. Time for a couple more, Griff?
That's kind of it. That's the list right there.
I guess I don't look at it, do I? That's our VibeScore segment. We do this on Saturdays about this time. Griffey drives, and if you want to check out VibeScore, you can download the app. It's free, and then we review the scores, and you can comment on it too. So there is some back and forth about politics and sports and TV shows and whatnot. VibeScore is one word, VibeScore. The boys from the Beat talk a little sports this afternoon, and they'll preview their show with us next on WGN. Adam Hoge's getting ready to beat the drum on sports. How are you, Adam?
I'm good, John. How are you? It's just listening to your Chris Sale, Jake Arrieta conversation. It is an interesting comparison between the two.
How would you answer that?
Well, I agree with you. I think it's hard to really have a wrong answer. They're different. I think Arrieta is more of a tactician, whereas Chris Sale just has really nasty stuff. And Arrieta does too, but it would be great to see them face each other in the All-Star game, and if somehow the two teams can match them up in that four-game series in late July, too, that would be unbelievable.
I guess they wouldn't do that. I mean, those rotations are too sacred to actually move it around for the fans. They wouldn't do that, would they?
No. Maybe they – I mean, I doubt they would come together and say, hey, let's try to make this happen. But maybe they – think about over the All-Star break a little bit earlier in the month. It'll be a couple weeks before that series, which is the last week of July. Maybe they'll just be lined up, and then as long as no one gets hurt or there's any changes, there's a possibility it could happen.
I don't know the answer to this. Maybe you do, but I mean, I presume that Arrieta's been getting more run support than Sales, so if you wanted to say whose ERA or, you know, I don't know, whose record is more impressive, maybe it would be Chris Sale this year, but I don't know that.
I don't know that off the top of my head either, John. I just know that both of those pitchers, every time they pitch, their team seems to win.
Yeah, well, that is what's been happening. Yeah.
Exactly. And the White Sox actually lost a very rare start with Jose Quintana on the hill today. The Yankees just had better pitching. It was a pitcher's duel, 2-1, and the Sox lost. So you just say, lost today, go win the series tomorrow.
Well, what did you make of, I don't know if you thought much about this, but we were talking earlier about when the Cubs lost, oh my God, two in a row, and some of us got a little butterfly. What did you think of that?
Yeah, Mark Harmon's now here in the studio.
Oh, thank you, Mark. Thank you. I need a little validation on this.
Well, I think and we're going to talk about this today, John, but I think Harmon sent me a text late in that game, the second game of that doubleheader. The honeymoon is over. We really need this one. And my response was, you do not need this one.
I meant all of that, John. There was a lot of narrative. What was that, Wednesday?
I think it was Wednesday.
So that day, if people recall, Jake Arrieta spoke about the Steven Strasburg deal, and he said he wasn't going to give the Chicago Cubs a discount, which we absolutely need. So that was bad news. Theo Epstein predicted a losing streak. And then the Cubs went out and got swept by the Padres. So they haven't been the Cubs to me all season long. But that day, they just kind of rose back into their original Cubness. And I was actually watching games with nerves in my stomach for the first time all season long, because I thought, everything was over. But, of course, you know, they came back and won yesterday, and they're winning right now, so we're good.
Well, what's their record right now? Is it 28-6, 27-6?
26-8.
26-8. 26-8. Mm-hmm. So does that mean we're 18 games over 500?
Yes, that does,
so
John.
If we played 500 ball, suppose the wheels fell off and we played 500 ball for the rest of the season, we would be okay. Right. The Cubs would be fine. And nobody's thinking that they're going to anything like that's going to happen. This is a team that's going to win maybe 100 games, right?
Well, as Mark pointed out last weekend on our show, that I believe the Cubs were on pace for 129 wins as of last weekend. So yeah, John getting swept by the San Diego Padres on Wednesday was very devastating to that ridiculous.
That's not how we're going to get that done, fellas.
Exactly. And also, I'd like to point out that with 8 losses and 2 of them coming on Wednesday, 25% of this team's losses came in one single day of the baseball season. I think everyone can relax a little bit.
I've been relaxed, but I
you don't sound it.
Well, listen, I think it is worth just the reality of the situation is that they're great, but until they win the World Series,
yeah. Would it be enough for you though, Mark, to be in the world? No.
No.
Absolutely. I mean, think about that. That would be pretty awesome, too, right? Or you've got this all-or-nothing mentality this year?
You can't. Well, come on, John. We can't go to the World Series and lose.
That would really be a buster, wouldn't it? Because this really, to quote Ron Santo, does feel like this is the year, doesn't it?
It has to be the year.
Well, if it's
it
not.
It really does. Those should
then
be
I don't know what one of them looks like.
Exactly.
But you can't know what the injuries are going to be or what momentum is going to be. It's who's hot in September and October, right? Doesn't that matter a lot?
Absolutely it is. And the playoffs are largely unpredictable. And if I'm a Cubs fan, I would still be a little bit worried about a series against the New York Mets and that pitching staff. And
that's a very good point by Adam right there, John. The team that they haven't faced this year, one of them at least, is the New York Mets, who did sweep them last year, who do have incredible pitching and are winning a lot of games. By the way, Arrieta threw the 6-3-2 Cubs going bottom six. Anything happens in the game, you'll hear it right here on WGN. You don't need the play-by-play. You just
Thank you for that.
Yeah. So, listen, they got swept by the Mets. What makes you think that they're going to beat the Mets? I'm not saying they won't, but that's a big mountain to climb.
You like their chances a lot more this year than you did last October, though, right?
Yes, absolutely. But
November, October, whatever.
When they got into the Mets series, I thought that they were going to beat the Mets. And then game one happened. It was actually in the first two innings, I'm like, this doesn't look good. This looks horrendous, actually. Because Arrieta was tired. He was beat.
That was the biggest thing in the whole series to me, was just that Jake had kind of run out of gas.
Yeah, hopefully everything. I mean, boy, are we looking forward here, aren't we? We're breaking down the pitching for the NLCS right now.
well, they're going to the playoffs. I think we can be very confident in that. If they don't go to the playoffs, this would be the most epic class. Anybody who started the way they've started, there's 6 teams in the history of baseball that have started at this level. 5 of them won the World Series. The other was the 116-win Seattle Mariners, who lost to the Yankees in 2001. That was around 9/11, the whole deal. So everybody that started like this has won the whole thing.
Yeah. Okay, you guys are on a roll. We'll be listening. We'll be listening after the news. Thank you, fellas.
Thanks, John.
The boys from the beat coming up on WGN.